Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you through their stories, life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. This is a special Baby Boomers edition. Rob Greaves here once again, and it's my pleasure to host another program in the Listen to Older Voices, The Baby Boomers Generation, featuring the second and final part of the life and times of Dom Barbuto. In part one, we learned that Dom came to Australia from a small island off the coast of Sicily in the mid to late 1950s. He and his family established themselves in Melbourne, and the young Dom recognised that he had a talent for drawing at a young age, a talent he honed, and one that helped him develop creative connections in the entertainment world. This week, Dom's art design freelancing, while working for the public service, becomes more and more successful and profitable. So he leaves the public service and in 1985 sets up his own business, Visible Inc., a business that's still running today. Dom wins contracts to design for major TV shows such as The Price is Right, Family Feud, and other programs. As a result of this success and his growing contacts in the entertainment world, he begins to design posters and a range of other materials for major music tours such as those by Jimmy Barnes, Dizzy Gillespie and Joan Armour Trading, just to name a few. Dom is in his creative element, and although he's working almost non-stop, his career in design moves from local to national to international work. Yet he finds time for relationships, and Dom is happily in a relationship with Jane. However, Dom's work and story doesn't stop here. Learn about the Debonairs, a music industry support group that meets at least once a month for lunch and raises money for Support Act, an organisation that directly supports music industry people in need. There is so much to Dom's story, so let's make a start. Here's Dom talking about the development of his company, Visible Inc. By now, did you have a team?
I had a partner who came, because we had a lot of media to place. I think we placed about $1 million worth of media in the first year in business. And so Ron Lepara used to be sales manager at Eon FM, because I used to do work for Eon as well. And he had left and he came and joined us for a year. And he went his own way to package sales teams and whatever for some publications and whatever. And I continued working. And we were doing work for Eon and Triple M. We started designing work for Hoyts Media Sales, and so they represented 50 radio stations around Australia, so we're doing everything like contracts, and so we're designing all the stationery and stuff, and games, scratch and win games.
It sounds like it was a very, very busy lifestyle.
Very busy at the time, you know, and it just didn't stop. And so I set up Visible Inc. in 1985.
As a response to this success.
So we set up the business. And then basically Michael White approached us, and I finished up designing the logos for game shows for Grundy's.
That was getting big deals.
So this was in the late 80s, and so we designed Family Feud and The Price is Right and Super Quiz that Mike Walsh and Deborah Hutton hosted, and Blind Date.
Can we just clarify, because when you say we design, were you talking about all the backdrops and all this?
Well, we designed the logos the shows, which then became part of the
program,
the set.
Yes.
And so they would do a dissolve from the logo, because the logo they basically animated and whatever. And so we designed it and they basically did the animation and whatever, and then it would dissolve onto the set. And so Family Feud was on air for 8 years, which was cool. Then we started doing, in the 80s, we started doing a lot of work for Richard East. And so...
Who's Richard East?
Richard East, a promoter. And so Richard East was taking care of Jimmy Barnes in those days.
Right.
So when Jimmy first went solo, we did Freight Train Heart and Barnstorming for him. And we also did a lot of tours. We did Transvision Vamp in those days, Dizzy Gillespie, Sonia Dada, Joan Armour Trading. And then Richard took over Jason Donovan. So we finished our packaging Jason Donovan internationally. So we even did his yearbooks for London, you know, for World Publishing in Manchester. And very successful. The first.
So you've gone from local in Melbourne to national to international.
Yes. And we just kept on, you know, look, I was like a hooker for my art, you know, use me, abuse me and pay me. I mean, I just kept working. I mean. So then we started doing a lot of work for the Victorian Rock Foundation and Oz Music. And so I designed, Australian Music Day, Australian Live Music Awards, the Melbourne Music Expo, International Guitar Month, Music Tech. I packaged the Melbourne Music Festival for 5 years back then. Just a string of shows, you know. So,
is this taking a toll on you? Or are you dealing with this okay?
I was just working, you know.
And the pressure and the constant demand for your...
Well, I was working... Well, I lived next door. I had two little workmen's cottages in Garden Street in South Yarra next to the Jam Factory. So I lived next door and the studio was in the house next door. And we actually put a doorway in between both houses. And so I had a staff of three working for us. So Mick Fetters from Madelake actually worked for me for 5 years, and we had some wonderful people that, you know, worked for us. Nancy Robinson, Nancy Munt, she was an American girl who worked for me for 10 years, and she's a great artist, and she, you know, in her own right, and she's happily working away. And it's funny how things happen, you know. I mean, so we're doing all these shows and tours. All of a sudden, you know, people came to us and asked us if we'd like to design some theatre shows. And so we started off, gee whiz. In the meantime, I got married.
Oh, you found time to have a relationship, did you?
So I finished up marrying a Swedish girl, and I got married.
How did you meet her?
Well, she came out as a tourist. Oh, she actually came out, Phil Philippou, who used to work for me as a designer. He was a Greek Cypriot, and he mm-hmm. went over to Cyprus, and he met some Swedish girls, and they were coming out to visit him, and one of them was Anneli. And so we had a relationship for a couple of years before we got married, where she would fly in and out, you know, from Sweden and whatever. And we eventually got engaged here, and it was my mother's fault we got married. You know, she said I was going to go over to meet just her family because we hadn't met at this stage. And Mum said, well, while you're there, why don't you get married, you know? So we finished up getting married in Stockholm, and I got married in the Rathaus, which is the town hall. And she came from a great family. And her uncle cooked for the King of Sweden, and he had a restaurant in the Fetherholmen, which is the Feather Islands off the coast of Stockholm. And that's where we had our wedding reception, and they shot cannons off when we arrived, and it was pretty...
Sounds like out of a movie.
Yeah, so we had a 3-month honeymoon in Europe, and I had the opportunity to go back to the islands where I was born, and I found my roots, and so we were together for a number of years, and it eventually sort of, you know, she went
back
to
Sweden. Look, you grow apart.
Mm.
That's life.
But, but I mean, she was 10 years my junior. I mean, we still keep in touch, you know, and she's, you know, happily living in Sweden, and she comes out to Australia occasionally.
Listen to Older Voices, revisiting through recollections.
I'm Rob Greaves, and I'm talking with Dom Barbuto, and Dom is reflecting back on both his personal and his working life.
So we start doing these shows. So we started off, I mean, we did the Bolshoi Ballet in 94, and I was working for these people, and so we finished up then doing Amadeus with Barry Otto, and that was in 94, and same people. And then we did David Copperfield in 9 countries, which was a huge success.
What did that involve for you?
We did everything. We designed all the artwork, all the press. We designed the programs, posters.
Everything.
Yeah, that was a big show. That was in 96. And then we designed Sweet Charity, which starred Kelly Abbey, which is was a big success in 97. And then we did the Dusty Springfield story with Wendy Stapleton. See, Wendy keeps coming back in 97. And then we did Fiddler on the Roof with Topol in 98. And then we redid it in 2005.
When you were designing the programs and everything that goes with it for these shows, how often do you take the opportunity of seeing the show?
All of them. Yeah, I usually go opening night. It's been a great experience. And so, like, one producer introduced me to another who, you know, and so we finished up doing 60 theatre productions since 94, you know, and you know, some of them were like Jolson, you know, which starred the late Rob Guest, which was great, and Sisterella, which was co-produced by Michael Jackson and Kevin Jacobson. Always Patsy Cline, which starred Deborah Conway. Oh, What a Night, which starred Kathy Sledge from Sister Sledge. We did Countdown, the musical comedy, and Hale and Pace, and it goes on and on and on. And so then we finish up doing a bit of country music, and I was packaging the American Country Music Association for Trevor Smith in those days. So we also packaged a big initiative for the Country Music Association here in Australia, which is called Australia Sold on Country. And they did this big show in Sydney at the casino, if I remember right. And so they had 200 of the top CEOs present, and there was a big country music showcase announcing to them that country music artists and country music was available to them to promote their products. And that was a big success. And we did all this artwork for Trevor and Rob Potts, who passed away unfortunately last year. So Rob Potts spoke to Trevor and said, "Who does your artwork? I mean, you know, do you mind if I speak to him? I've got work for him." So Rob in those days was running, they were doing a lot of country tours and whatever. So we finished up doing a bag full of tours for them, you know, Tommy Emmanuel, wow, there's so many. But anyway, the thing is, we finished up doing Telstra Road to Tamworth, which was the talent quest for Tamworth. And so we did like 18 shows around Australia, which would be a country show, but there'd be a talent quest as well with country music festival thing. And they would pick a winner of the of each of those heats, and they would go to Tamworth for the finale. And whoever won the competition would finish up winning like a $200,000 prize. They'd finish up going to Nashville and recording, and Rob would manage them, and they would then become the ambassador for the following years. And so we did that for about 5 years. With Rob, I mean, we did a bunch of shows anyway, as well. Jody Messina, a bunch of American country acts, and you know, and Rob unfortunately passed away in a bike accident last year, which was really sad.
That is sad, yes.
But he was a great client, you know, and a good friend too, you know.
Does any of this work either require you or allow you to travel overseas, or is it all based where you work here?
I didn't have to travel overseas. I mean, I did. Well, I finished up doing all these tours later on for Andrew McManus, and so with a lot of international acts. But we would do the artwork for New Zealand, and sometimes there would be shows in other countries, but we'd do the artwork here in Melbourne, and we'd just supply the artwork to them overseas, and they would do it. But we had a big string of shows with Andrew, and we designed like Motley Crue and Def Leppard, Stevie Nicks, Joan Collins, UB40, Crosby, Stills and Nash, Cranberries, Lenny Kravitz, Heart. So we did a big string of shows, and that was wonderful. You know, it worked out really well. But it's been an interesting time. You know, we haven't stopped working.
No.
And so last month, I'm celebrating 33 years in business.
33 years, which you could really look at people in the eye and say successful business.
Well, we had our purple patches, and you get so busy that when you're going through a purple patch, you don't realise you're going through it until later, you know.
Yes.
But, and then you look back and go, that was good, wasn't it? You know, I mean,
yes.
Look, you know, I thought everybody lived this way when I was younger. I mean, it's funny, I didn't realise that we're doing actually something special until later on, you know. So we've been mainly entertainment-based during that time, even though we've done corporate work and whatever as well. But
that's a very heavy workload over a lot of years. Are you able to find any time for yourself?
Sure.
Well, what do you do when you're not working? What do you do to relax? What do you do to enjoy you?
I love music. I go out to venues and catch shows. I have dinners with friends. I do normal stuff, you know. I'm lucky to have a lovely partner who we've been together the last 4 years, and she's currently living in Warrnambool taking care of her aging stepmother. And so for the last year or so, if she doesn't come to Melbourne, I'll go up and see her every few weeks. So I catch a train to Warrnambool, you know, so we spend time in Warrnambool, and so we get around.
You do get around.
Yes.
Our connection comes through an organisation that you have been very much a part of its development and, in fact, its initiation, called Debonairs. Mm. Would you like to share the story of Debonairs and its history and,
well,
what it's about?
Brian Cadd put the lunch together originally. in 2003. He and Amanda Pellman fell in love, and while they were doing Long Way to the Top, and Brian was living in Queensland, Amanda was living in Sydney, and so they decided to come down to Melbourne and bring their families with them. And Brian hadn't been here for some time, so he invited a dozen friends to come to lunch. And that was the beginning of the Debonairs. And so the first lunch was held at the Italian Waiters Club in 2003. And from there, I think we went to the Argo. So Brian was running it for the first 12 months, and then Amanda got a job working for Michael Chugg in Sydney as a producer. So they moved to Sydney. So Brian sort of said, you run with it, you know. And there was about 20 coming to lunch in those days. It wasn't a lot of people, you know, but it was, you know, tight. It was pretty, yes. You know, a lot of laughs. And it was just a boozy lunch, you know. So we became affiliated with Support Act, which is the Musicians' Benevolent Fund, I guess, which helps musicians and roadies and entertainers who have fallen on hard times. And so it started growing, you know, like from 20. We now have lunches, our Christmas lunches will have over 200 people coming to lunch, and our anniversary lunch around the same amount, you know. But usually it's about, you know, between 40 and 60 people for lunch. So it's a monthly luncheon. During that time, we've been responsible for helping put together fundraisers for a number of well-known musicians, and we helped raise $280,000 for Max Merritt, because Max suffers from good pasture syndrome, which is kidney failure, or he has to have dialysis every second day. And that helped fix his house in Los Angeles, because he lives there, which had been damaged after the earthquakes. But it was funny how it all came together, because Wally Bishop rang me and said, your mates, the Debonairs, said, do you reckon any of them be interested in performing a concert for Max? You know, so I sent out an email to all the Debonairs. They all put their hands up. So they finished up being the back line. And one of the other Debonairs, who's a businessman, who's an old friend of Michael Chugg's, actually, I won't mention names, he anonymously paid for all the interstate performers to come in and perform. Mm-hmm. It was the most amazing show, and a 3-DVD set came from that, which is an amazing show. But we helped with Lobby Lloyd's benefit as well before he passed away. We were good friends. So we've been having lunch for 16 years now, would you believe
Goodness
it?
Goodness me.
So I've been sort of convening it for the last 15 of those 16 years. We've helped raise around $500,000 for Support Act over that time. So, look, it's yes. great. It's helped out a lot of people. And there's yes. been other, you know, we've been able to help people directly as well. We had a well-known musician, actually part of our Debonairs, whose house was burnt down. He had his family, and it was around just before Christmas and whatever. So we had our Christmas luncheon, and we were able to raise a few $1,000s for him, plus a raffle, that, you know, and so we're able to give him, you know, I forget, $3,000 in cash for him to sort of rent a new place and get his family in there in time for Christmas, which yeah. was just wonderful.
Yes.
I mean, I've had people ring me saying, you know, like somebody's in trouble, you know, they haven't got food in their fridge, and they can't, you know, so I've spoken to Support Act in Sydney, and they've sorted that out. They've had, you know, people bring food over, they've, you know, hospital bills have been paid for, you know. It's a wonderful charity, and it's you know, we've made a difference with a few people's lives.
So it's about
lives.
The industry helping its own.
Yes.
And Debonairs, the members are all industry members in one way or another.
Yes. So you've got to have worked in the business. Somebody else wants to set one up in Queensland, but there is one in New South Wales that's been running for 12 years or more. There's one in Adelaide that's been running for also a long time, you know, yeah. and they also raise money for Support Act. And there was one in Perth, and I think they're talking about sort of putting another luncheon together in Perth. It's just like things happen. I mean, one of the people who was involved with the one in Perth passed away, and sort of then, you know, for someone else to take up the mantle, yeah. you know. And so I went over to America in 2015, I think. And so while I was there, I caught up with Max, you know, and actually Gavin Wood, who lives there as well, came over and picked me up and went to his local pub. And I was a bit concerned about his health. He's becoming frail. And so I had all these friends in LA who, some of them know each other, some of them don't. There's a lot of expats, you know, producers and people that are there. So I couldn't have lunch with everybody individually, so we organised a lunch at Max's Pub, which is the White Hart, which is in Woodland Hills, which is a little bit out, but it's an English pub, you know, and they have so much fun. They have lunch twice a month. And so that's been going on for the last, 5 years or so.
So there is a
LA Debonairs, yes. So I designed a T-shirt for them, and which is our logo with Los Angeles underneath and palm trees. And they're really happy, and they have lunch twice a month, and it's surprising who turns up there. So we have 700 on our books in Melbourne, but we'll have 200 at our Christmas lunch. So it depends who's not working.
And this is Listen to Older Voices. Ageless stories on Ageless Radio.
Look, it's been an amazing, you know, journey.
Mm.
And we're still working, you know, and still doing shows, and the work comes in.
I think we're heading towards a very nice little conclusion to our chat, because you're still working, but you've hit 65, which in theory, and I emphasise theory, is the retirement age. You can get a pension, you can do all that.
66.
66 now.
So I can get a pension next year. Okay. I don't believe
it. You're a very vital man. You can see that. You're very energetic still. You've got real sparkle in your eyes. You're not ready to roll over yet.
No, I'm looking at another chapter in my life. I mean, look, I'm an artist, but I've been a commercial artist all my life. Now, Jane, my partner, is a painter as well, and so she's a fine artist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I draw, but I don't paint.
Mm-hmm.
Because I haven't learned the techniques, and so something I'm planning to do. If I work 3 days a week, I'm happy. Pays the bills, and there's other things I want to do. So I'm planning actually sort of take some painting classes. And you just don't know what may happen in the future. I mean, you know, Jane and I have been talking about maybe buying a little house out in the country and painting, you know.
Mm.
And maybe that'll be a new career for me, you know.
Indeed.
And the funny thing is, I know I can fill a room if I have an exhibition or fill a gallery with my friends and whatever.
No
the
doubt.
Question is, will anybody buy any work? You know?
yes.
So the thing is that's something at the back of my mind. But I really don't know what, because I don't do stuff for myself. I mean, you know, occasionally a friend will say, look, you know, you look tired, come and stay at our place, you know, for a few days or whatever. We're away, and they'll give me a key. And so I'll go and have a weekend away in a country property. And during my stay, I'll sit up on, you know, on a hill and have a look, and I'll draw the farmhouse and leave it under a sugar bowl when I leave. And so that's the closest I get to doing stuff for myself as such, you know. So I don't have time to do work for myself. I don't know what medium I want to use. You know, I may finish up going back and using pastel, which I'm quite au fait with and whatever. But as far as painting is concerned, it's got me intrigued. I don't know if I want to use watercolour or acrylics. You know, Jane, my partner, she uses gouache, which is a cross between watercolour and acrylics. It's in the middle there. So we'll see. I need to find out what I'd like to do, what my subject matter will be.
Because all going well, unless the bus down the road accidentally hits you, you've got at least another 25, 30 years left.
One would hope.
There's a lot of time, isn't there?
Well, I mean, you know, I've been diagnosed with osteoarthritis in my spine, which is like the legacy of working over a drawing board or a computer for 40 years. The back gets a bit sore, but I'm a diabetic as well, so I've just got to watch what I eat, drink, do, you know. So I think I'll become a crusty painter, or I'd like that, you know. And that's something to look forward to. I mean, I'd love to have a piece of my work finish up in every major gallery in Australia before I go, you know. I mean, some of our work now is, you know, part of the National Sound and Music Archive. It's part of the National Library, part of the Performing Arts Museum, also the Music Vault. It's good, you know, so it works out there, you know. And at least I've left something behind, you know. I mean, and hopefully it'll stay there for a long time, you know.
Probably my final question to you. You look back at your life now. In general terms, would you make any major changes to your life if you could go back, or are you pretty happy with how it went?
Look, I mean, I'm here. I'm quite happy with the way things have gone. I mean, one could have saved a lot more money. One could have been a little bit more frugal, you know. Instead, I've always, you know, lived my life pretty full, you know.
But very few regrets.
Very few, yeah, You know, very few regrets. You know, if only I did this or no, it's not like that at all. You know, sometimes you go through periods where you go, oh God, I should have done that. You know, but no, because you go through that and then later you go, there's a reason for everything, and it only becomes evident later. And I think basically, you know, I fulfilled a lot of the things that I wanted to, you know, unbeknownst to me. You know, it's funny because you tend to reflect back and you go, gee, we did okay, didn't we? You know, I mean, it's okay. I'm proud of what I've done. It's not over yet by a long shot, but it's quite funny. You go through your working life and you don't think you're really doing anything really special. You're just working. And then in retrospect, I mean, you go, wow, now that's good, you know. And so it's wonderful to leave some stuff behind, because the work that I did was disposable in the sense it served a purpose for the time as far as the shows and whatever. But people do remember the images because, you know, they were in ads and they were, you know, people do remember the images. But it's the artwork was disposable, and it's wonderful for the art to be part of collections. And you know, and people, you know, people have been saying, oh, you should duplicate some of the art and you know, people would be interested in buying, you know, and I go, well, I'll get around to it.
Dom, thank you very much for being on the program. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, Rob. Very nice.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Turak Times.